Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Where does the mega content era of television go from here? And when does interactivity go mass media in content and advertising? Some observations from DGO founder and creative chief Mark DiMassimo when he joins me next. Our second half hour addresses this question. How do we make Olympics television great again? Hear if your answer matches mine and bring your thoughts to life by phone or chat room. That's the next half hour. Also ahead, Disney Plus developments galore and our new classic trivia question and prize. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, the iRadio Podcast Network, Reason, and Burble. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. And find out how you might be able to get your first 3 months free. That's all coming up later in the program. Good to have you with us on this Monday of February 2022. And welcome once again to the program all about TV's current and future. 36 degrees, top of the hour here in the Big Apple. We have some wonderful stuff coming your way over the next 60 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a phone call from you. So pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio. And remember, our chat room is available to you as well. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, tune in screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Mark DiMassimo from DGO joins me here in the Big Apple after these news notes. The Will Smith Adventure miniseries keeps coming for Disney+. With Welcome to Earth wrapped up, Smith will show up next on Disney's mega content family venture with Pole to Pole, a journey from South Pole to North Pole. National Geographic TV will oversee Pole to Pole's production. Elsewhere at Disney+, Catherine Zeta-Jones will hook up with National Treasure, a TV series continuation of the popular movie franchise with Nicolas Cage. Action comedy series American Born Chinese is ready to begin filming in Los Angeles before the end of the month. And the service will premiere Made for Flick Cheaper by the Dozen March 18th, co-starring Gabrielle Union and Zach Braff. Now some quickies. 10-owned TV stations around the country returned to Dish Network today thanks to a new carriage deal. After years on BET, the annual Super Bowl Gospel Celebration moves to Bounce TV Saturday night. Amazon Prime and IMDb TV will replay the hour-long special the rest of February. Good Trouble's fourth season begins March 9th on Freeform. Popular Hallmark Channel annual event Kitten Bowl will not happen this Super Bowl Sunday. GAC Media will meet with the event's organizers later this week about a TV return there next year. And Series Fest, the annual TV festival based in Denver, will hit the road for a pitch-a-thon event for new series creators. Place and date, Chicago's iconic Second City Theater, March 31st. And that is news notes for today. Now joining me here in the Big Apple, the founder and creative chief of DGO, Mark DiMassimo. Mark, welcome to the program. And Mark should be joining us any moment. Mark, you there? All right, hold on. We're having a bit of a technical issue. So what we're going to do is we're going to invite Mark to call back. Use the number that you had, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see you ready to go back on the air, we'll get you back on the air. In the meantime, I want to let you know that this Super Bowl Sunday, something else besides the big games to make things super is the premiere of Peacock's long-anticipated Bel-Air. That's the new version of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with Will Smith aboard as executive producer. We will have this Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised as our lead guest, the key executive producers and co-showrunners of the program, T.J. Brady and Rashid Newsom. They are our lead guests from Bel-Air, the premiere Super Bowl Sunday on Peacock. Plus, from the PBS series Poetry in America going to third season later this month, we'll have the creator and host Alyssa New. And giving us a live poem on the air, the former co-star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend on the CW, Donna Lynn Chaplin. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And now, joining me here in the Big Apple, from DGO is Mark DiMassimo. Mark, welcome in. Hold on for 1 second. Let me see if we can get him. I know he is on the line. And for some reason, he's not popping through. Mark, call back one more time. I'm going to take you off. Call me back one more time, and third time should be that charmer. All right? So, again, I want to remind you, coming up Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, from Bel Air on Peacock, we will have executive producers and co-showrunners T.J. Brady and Rasheed Newsom. And from Poetry in America on PBS, Listen New, that's the creator and host, and Donna Lynn Chaplin, who will give us a live poetry reading on the air, in person. All right, I believe we now have Mark DiMassimo from DIGO on the line. Mark, come on in.
Hallelujah. Can you hear me, Simon?
Yes, you are coming through loud and clear, so thank you for being with us.
Oh.
First of all, for those who don't know, what is DIGO?
All right, DIGO is a 25-year-old independent brand and advertising agency. We focus on positive behavior change, have done a lot in the evolution of the TV space over the years, from CNBC to HBO to Netflix and beyond. And I'm the founder, I'm the creative chief.
Mm-hmm. So let's get to the question I posed at the top of the program. We are in this mega content era with all of these services, from Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, to all the Plus services, Paramount Plus, BET Plus, HBO Max, Peacock, Apple TV Plus, et cetera, et cetera. Where are we going the rest of this year?
Simon, can I just first say it's just wonderful to be on the radio talking about television. My parents told me after I became slightly successful that they would have voted me most likely to spend his life sitting on the couch. Also, I think it's awesome that you are sponsored by Audible. I actually worked with Don Katz at the founding of Audible. We were his agency figuring it out. It was actually called Audible Word at that time. So very interested in the evolution of TV. I don't know that I can... You know, I don't know that I'm the expert on what goes on for the rest of this 1 year. I sort of take a longer view. So I hope that's going to be okay.
All right, so take the long view then.
All right, well, look, first off, this is TV's golden age. I mean, TV won. We watch our movies on TV now. We have the TV on and sort of as our central screen, even while we're interacting with other devices. More people are using multiple devices than are using one device, and TV is the center. Video, as an advertising guy, I've got to tell you, video is the most powerful tool in the advertisers, certainly for any large advertisers' tool chest, bar none. There's nothing to compete. So television is now addressable. So it's television, for the most part now, the majority of television out there, over 70%, has all of the benefits that digital advertising used to tout. We can stream video to most people in the United States now, and we can give them the messages that they're more likely to respond to, the ones that they want. So television is just... It's just become more and more powerful. Anybody who was predicting that the internet was going to wipe out television or any of that stuff, of course, we don't even hear that anymore. But television is just winning. So, you know, what are the trends that have led to this victory for television? Well, they're the same trends that have really undermined some of the original players, like cable companies, the old monopolies. The trends really are, of course, the explosion of technology and the, you know, the increasing speeds, which have made, you know, streaming so ubiquitous and so easy and so quick and so addictive, right? And then, of course, there's all the money behind that technology that has led to this explosion of both quality and quantity of content.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pause there.
Is this quality and quantity of content going to continue unabated, or at some point are we going to see some contraction? Because right now it looks like you have all sorts of people doing all sorts of original content. You have multi-channel bundles, some like Tubi and others that are now creating original content, whether it's new series or made-for-TV movies. And you also have all of these new programming services from all sorts of players that are making it through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And there's no sense that the capability and capacity of these products is going to diminish anytime soon.
You know, it's the question, right? How long can this go on? Is this a new normal? It's certainly not normal, but there's an enormous amount of money out there. There's an enormous hunger for more and more quality entertainment, for more and more targeted, specific news sources, et cetera. And there's also the whole integration of social, television, and the whole world of gaming. And then just forget, I'm not going to talk about the metaverse because I don't know anything about that yet, you know, other than what people are saying. But there's a lot of money chasing audience. And while there's a lot of money chasing audience, these folks eventually learn, and they're learning faster and faster, that content is king. Content's king, so they're going to invest in content. And I don't see – it's going to end, but I don't see the end of it. I think we've got years to run.
Mm. It seems, Mark, that this may be the year, after so many decades of talking about it, that interactive television in various flavors is finally going to go mass public, whether it is interactive fitness channels, whether it's gaming through gaming hubs where you don't use a console to play the game on the television set, you use your voice through artificial intelligence or a wireless controller. It seems that we may be having some ventures that right now are being shown other places that may get on the TV set that would allow people to interact with the content or interact with the programming. And we've showcased some on the air or talked about, like Echo or Fireside, which we showcased last year that Mark Cuban is an investor in. What's your sense about interactive? Are we on the verge of mass adoption or mass use in different flavors?
I would say we are. I mean, I would say right now that it's money and innovation chasing an audience that already is incredibly interactive. You know, by 2023, it's predicted that we'll have 76% of the folks out there will not just have a normal cable coming into their home for television. They're going to be using interactive devices exclusively for their TV and video content. Of those, 36 million will have never had a cable. This is a whole generation that has grown up interactive. They're used to being on Discord, interacting in their games, being social. So it's just an inevitability. There really isn't any more consumer education that has to happen. It's just a matter of the services doing the hard work of making sure everybody's hooked up.
Mm-hmm. Now that it seems that maybe we are finally ending this pandemic, how does that impact the conversion, let's say, of viewing habits from broadcast and cable through to smart TV sets and devices? It seems that there's some people think that cord cutting, people dropping cable service or dropping satellite service may accelerate or decelerate depending on where we go from here. And some people think that, the smart TV set and smart TV device is going to be now the way people will watch billions and billions of hours of content.
You know, the pandemic has been one of the great sampling opportunities ever, right? Obviously it has its bad sides too, but it's been an amazing sampling opportunity, teaching people to adopt new technologies much faster than they otherwise would have. And I think, you know, the genie's already out of the bottle. Folks have had enormous amounts of time to get addicted to binge watching their new shows rather than watching in real time and waiting. They don't like that. The Netflix CEO says that the competition is sleep. So I think that sounds a little ominous if you think sleep's important for people, and I do, but I think he's onto something. I think people have had a lot of time with the pandemic in order to realize that there's an enormous amount of content out there, and that they and to learn that you can sign up for Hulu, that you can sign up for Netflix, that you can figure out what's on Amazon Prime, and on and on. So there's going to be increasing cord cutting. I do not think the end of the pandemic spells the end of this. I think people, as they start to spend even more out in the real world, have learned the lesson that that they can get more for less. And I think they're going to need to, and they're going to want to. And there's also this whole new generation that was never there at all. And I think their behaviors are going to take over the next few years.
One factor behind this cord cutting, and perhaps behind also the drop in ratings on broadcast and cable television, what we call linear TV, to what's going on smart TVs, sets of devices, seems to be this clutter of advertising, where you have so many ad breaks per hour on a broadcast or cable network, and so many commercials in the break or in each break. And one of the advantages of going to smart TV sets devices is you get on many services less commercial time, and the commercials seem to matter more. What does the ad industry think about this? Are they very worried about clutter? And what about do they see interactive ads or ads where you can buy the product or the service as a way out?
Yes, to worry about clutter, although, you know, let's talk a little bit about how real that worry really is based on the behavior of folks in the ad business. So we'll go back to that in a second. And absolutely to interactive advertising, big push to make, you know, more and more of that in video and beyond. So, you know, we're in a new R&D phase, really, with all the new technologies and some of these technologies that aren't new coming together. So there's going to be a lot going on there too. But just to get to the core of your question, is there too much advertising? You know, the consumer in all of us says there is, and we're always wringing our hands among the agency people, the creative people, the advertising people, about the, you know, the ubiquity of advertising, about the decreasing popularity of the advertising content and decreasing quality as many of us see it. And yet on the other hand, the vast majority of streaming video that people are watching, even online, is ad supported. So for the most part, people are opting to watch things when they have to watch ads with them. So there is some question about, you know, whether the consumer is as anti-advertising as we fear that they are. They seem to be choosing to consume things with a lot of advertising. And I also just think you're going to see more and more advertising coming. There's more advertising dollars. Advertisers are spending more. So I think advertising is here to stay, and it's a big part of sponsoring this whole world of television going into the future.
When they are going to divert this spending this way, are they also thinking, I'm not going to make the same type of commercials that I do on broadcast or cable? I'm going to make commercials that involve the audience, that interact with them, that care their needs, that that they can, if they want to buy the product, they can do so, you know, with their voice or with their remote control through the television set. What's the mindset of advertisers, you see it, moving to this next environment?
Simon, the smart, the creative, the innovative-minded, and the future-focused certainly are. And you know, there are many industries jumping up in order to, you know, enable and help traditional advertisers in order to adapt to the opportunities that are coming. You know, but I think the rule has been that the majority just sort of bumble into new opportunities, and they first try to extend their old stuff, or maybe if they think there's an award in it or a promotion, they try something new. And I think it's really it's down to the challengers to show folks how it's done. And there will be challengers, and they'll be, you know, there'll be new masterpieces that we'll all want to follow. I hope to create some of them. But I think they'll be the minority in the beginning. You know, we saw it with just take pre-roll, you know, pre-roll video, say on YouTube, 6 seconds. In the beginning, for, I don't know, some years, it was just the first 6 seconds of a commercial. They hoped you watched the rest. It was the same commercial you'd see on TV. And then finally, some smart folks said, wait a second, shouldn't we design the first 6 seconds in order to, one, delight people if they only watch six, since most people do. Two, be good for our brand if they only watch six, because most people do. And three, maybe seduce people into watching the rest. Shouldn't we design uniquely for this particular medium? And then some folks started to do it, and of course, results improved, and it became a, you know, a happy thing for advertisers and for audiences too, because they got more interesting stuff.
Mark DiMassimo from DIGO is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. He is based in New York this half hour, and so is yours truly, Simon Applebaum, with you live from the Big Apple. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio. Have a question or comment on remaining minutes with Mark? Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And don't forget, coming up our next half hour, our new classic trivia question of the week with a prize. Could you be our second weekly winner in a row after Ellen Oppenheim here in the Big Apple? Well, stay tuned. It might just be you. Mark, next-gen television. We have local TV stations now around the country deploying next-gen TV technology. They're hoping to use it to do all sorts of things, including interactive ads. What do you think of next-gen? Is the ad industry looking at this as another alternative marketplace?
You know, yes, they absolutely are looking at it. I think anybody who's serious about playing the game, you know, over the next decade really needs to be doing R&D in next-gen TV. I'm sure we're going to see some interesting stuff. You know, I think the other side of it, though, is I wouldn't be surprised if we don't learn in the next couple of years that folks are a bit behind what their plan was, because, you know, there's been this thing called the pandemic that has slowed down a lot of future seeking efforts and, you know, focused people on the emergencies that have come up again and again, you know, things like this Olympics that's going on right now, for example, and the Super Bowl that's coming up next weekend. And how do you do these things? How do you do productions at all in the middle of a pandemic? It's been an issue. But I do think that next-gen TV is going to bring out a lot of next-gen creativity, and certainly we're very interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Mark, before you go, I want to get your thoughts before I give mine about the Olympics situation. So far, NBC Universal's coverage, the worst ratings ever for Olympics in our lifetime. It's even gotten to the point where, in terms of getting out total day viewership, they have to fudge by incorporating tablets and smartphone use for the first time. What do you see has to happen to turn this around, to turn the viewership around?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you, and we're talking about future Olympics. I mean, their first night coverage down 66%. I mean, this is a rout, and yes, you're right. They've added tablets, they've added out of home, you know, interactive out of home and that sort of stuff. So they're really having to try to make the best case that they can. No answer yet on how much the political situation, the U.S. diplomatic boycott, might have played in the results. I'm going to say not much. I don't think when folks decide what to watch on TV that plays a very big part. If anything, it was a little bit of chatter about the Olympics. I think one challenge with the Olympics is that it's viewing with no history and no future. You know, unless you're in a very small group, you know, niche, you don't know these characters for the most part before the games, and you don't follow them much after, unless they become absolute stars and then spokespeople. And so, you know, it's one, it's this rare sort of island of real-time television in a world where, you know, everything else has a past and a future. So I think it's kind of hard to build excitement for something that's a mystery now. Even our Super Bowl commercials, which used to, you know, be celebrated for only being on the game and only being revealed on the game, now are shared in the weeks before the Super Bowl because the audience is there and the audience wants them. So, I don't know exactly what to do, but I think they have to sort of build, they need to build pre-Olympics content that people care about and help them get to know the characters and what's at stake for them. You know, all the things I would do if I was doing a reality TV show.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have a lot to say about that because that is one of the issues, Mark, and we're going to talk more about that in the second half hour. And if you can listen in, I'd love to hear afterthoughts about what we say in that next half hour, so stay tuned for that. And if you want to know more about Mark's organization, DIGO, and what it does and the advertising it represents, here's where you go online, digobrands.com, digobrands.com. Mark DiMassimo, a founder, creative chief of DIGO, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate all the thoughts, and we'd love to have you back on soon. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Simon. It was great. Appreciate it.
You got it. Take care. Mark DiMassimo from DIGO joining me here in New York. More tomorrow, televised coming away, but first, a word from the fine folks at audible.com. There's a character that's unforgettable in a book by Anita Prose. It's called The Maid. And when you hear about Molly, the maid in that novel, it will be unforgettable listening. And you can get The Maid audiobook style right now with a trial run with audible.com. And you can also find out how, if you subscribe to audible.com for a limited time, you can get your first 3 months absolutely gratis, free. Remember, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment information and inspiration. Over 250,000 titles to choose from. And you listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, it's Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Just sign up for the one-month trial at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, that 1 month to try out the book, and also special health and wellness information while it lasts. If you're an Amazon Prime member, great luck for you. Two audiobooks for your trial, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater, great one-woman and one-man shows, and so much more. Remember, Audible.com makes a great gift for you or someone you love. And again, if you subscribe to Audible.com now, past the one-month trial, your first 3 months are free. For all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Like I said, it makes a great gift any time of the year, including Valentine's Day coming up this weekend for you or someone you love. This is Tomorrow Be Televised. We're the promo about the two. Happy to have you with us on this Monday, February 7th, 2022. Simon Avon with you live from New York. And stay tuned because coming up, we have a classic trivia question of the week. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win a brand new prize, and what a prize it is. Plus, we'll have some thoughts about how do we make Olympics television great again. I've got a lot of thoughts, and I'd like to hear from you too. So stay tuned. Our next half hour comes your way after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Today, catch up with the great Women Who Jam on Women Who Jam Radio. That's today at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Women Who Jam Radio, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best beats are 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this February 7th, 2022. Happy to have you aboard wherever you are. Simon Avon with you live from New York, where it is 36 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment in our half hour ahead, focusing much on the Olympics and how do we make Olympics TV great again, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. All right, it's time for our classic trivia question of the week, and we're going for our second weekly winner in a row following Ellen Oppenheimer here in New York. And we have a very nice prize if you're the winner. It's a very special DVD, From the Big Apple to the Big Easy, The Concert for New Orleans. Remember, this was a concert that benefited the victims of Hurricane Katrina way back when, with a lot of great, wonderful artists. And this can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Name the theme song from the long-running ABC sitcom Family Matters. Yes, that's the one with Steve Urkel, played by Jaleel White, and the rest of that fun family and friends. Name the theme song for the long-running TV series on ABC, Family Matters. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address. First with the answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question first thing tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Once again, here's the question. Name the theme song for the long-running ABC sitcom Family Matters. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's your way to win. So go for it, and all the very best. And now, an extended comment. Making Olympics television great again. Well, the Olympics are on from Beijing, and in terms of viewership, it's giving NBC Universal all sorts of fits. The opening night on Thursday, which really was supposed to be the opening night because the opening ceremony was on Friday, but last Thursday, the first night, for NBC broadcast alone, 7.4 million viewers. 4 years earlier, the first night of the Winter Olympics, the pre-night before the opening ceremonies, 14.5 million. That's about half the viewership that was 4 years ago out the door for February 3rd. And then the following night, the primetime replay of the opening ceremonies in Beijing, 8.9 million, that's two-thirds of the audience from 4 years ago, 4 years ago Winter Olympics, out the door. I think that despite the fact that the Olympic ratings have gone down for years, and I mean years, there is an opportunity to turn it around. Will we ever get to the point where, like decades ago, 30, 40, 50 million people or more watched the Olympics on a primetime night on a broadcast network? Nope, not in this era of television. I'll explain why in a bit. But yes, the Olympics viewership can go upward. Now, in order to, first of all, do that, paint a scenario as to how we can get the Olympic ratings to rebound, you want to know why we are in this position in the first place. Well, chalk it up to four different factors. Factor number one, the International Olympic Committee, which, in my opinion, comes across as the worst sports organization in the world. And in recent decades, they have made not one, but two big mistakes that have cheapened the Olympics in the minds of viewers. Number one, the International Olympic Committee decided, well, rather than have a Winter and Summer Olympic Games in one calendar year every 4 years that made the events so unique, so anticipatory, you wanted to catch them, they decided, oh, we're going to have a Winter or a Summer Games every 2 years. The quality, what made the Olympics so special, went out the door just like that. And it became mundane every 2 years. And it should be pointed out, the International Olympic Committee has never, ever, ever offered a rationale why it did this. There was no complaints whatsoever. There was no thoughts from various nations. We want to do this, go every 2 years with the Olympics. Nobody asked for it. The IOC just did it and never offered a rationale why. And it has backfired in terms of viewership, at least in the United States. Mistake number two, not opening the games with the opening ceremonies. Instead, to do events 2 days, or in the case of the Tokyo Olympics, last summer, 3 days in advance. What's the idea of an opening ceremonies when you're not opening the games with the opening ceremonies? How ridiculous is that? Well, it was a mess. And that's why, again, the opening ceremony ratings have gone down the door, or down the drain. On top of that, with these particular Olympics staging in Beijing, China, for me, the International Olympic Committee should have yanked these games out of Beijing and postponed them for another year or two. Why? Why is the Chinese government being rewarded with staging an Olympics when they have not taken accountability or responsibility for unleashing a global pandemic on the world, for human rights abuses beyond the Uyghurs with their own people, cutting off democracy in Hong Kong and threatening to cut off democracy in Taiwan? The IOC looked the other way, and rather than do the right thing or the important thing, which was to yank these games out of Beijing and basically say, no, you don't deserve this, and we'll put the games on in 2023 or 2024 somewhere else. They let the games happen in Beijing, and it has turned out to be a mess, a big mess. So that's factor number one, the International Olympic Committee's actions. Factor number two, and our previous guest, Mark DeMassimo, I think referred to it, is the apathy of sports media. And I'm talking about everything from sports talk radio stations around the country to national and regional sports television networks and sports radio networks, local TV stations, sportscasts and newscasts, local radio stations, local newspapers, magazines, etc. When it comes to sports media, the Olympics have fallen off their radar screen. They don't cover them, not during the games or in the period between the games. So you, as a potential viewer, don't know who the players are. You don't know who the up-and-coming athletes are. You don't know what sports to keep an eye on for, because nobody covers them. And that's all of sports media, not just one group, all of sports media. So that's factor number two. Factor number three is the state of television right now. It's not the way TV was back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even the early 90s when the Olympics were all on a broadcast network, ABC for many years, then CBS, NBC, and now NBC. At that time, when one network had the Olympics in prime time on a broadcast network, the other networks played dead. First the broadcast networks, then the cable networks played dead. Reruns, movies, that's our fair. When the Olympics are on, we're not competing. Well, that era is no longer. Not with mega content services like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Crackle, Disney+, BET+, HBO Max, Paramount+, Discovery, etc. Every one of these services, not to mention the other services that are running through smart TV sets and smart devices, as well as multi-channel bundles, they are creating original programming, and it's running up against the Olympics, and it's getting well-publicized and well-promoted, and voila, great opportunity for viewers to go elsewhere. The mega content era has had a big impact on Olympic viewership. Now, you notice that so far, I haven't mentioned NBC Universal yet. And there's a good reason, because with these first three factors, NBC Universal had no issue with this. They're not to blame for this. They're not to blame for what the IOC did or what sports media did or the state of TV, of which they are now in the mega content are part of with Peacock. In fact, the problem with viewership is not with NBC's own coverage of the Olympics. Molly Solomon, the executive producer of NBC's Olympics coverage, has done an amazing job. The coverage is the best it's ever been. The camera work, the images, the play-by-play and commentator teams, the graphics, the stats, fantastic. Earlier this over the weekend, I saw the biathlon. Marvelous coverage, including this great shot looking like you're right over the horizon of snow, where one, two, and then three athletes, all competing for medals, showed up going over the ridge. Amazing camera. It was like watching a scene from Lawrence of Arabia, the scene where Peter O'Toole from out of the horizon comes into the picture. Beautiful, beautiful work. And the commentary teams, play-by-play commentary, they're even-handed. They're not jingoistic toward one country or another. And they treat everybody equally. And they're enthusiastic equally, whether the athlete that wins the medals are from the United States or Canada or Russia or Norway, whatever. It's great. It's refreshing. It's wonderful to see. Takes me back to what ABC did back in the 60s and 70s when their coverage came of age. However, there is one side of NBC Universal that is letting the Olympics down. The marketing and promotion. It stinks. The marketing and the promotion stinks. Did you know that there was a lot of coverage on NBC and on various NBC networks of the Olympic trials, whether it was figure skating, skiing, biathlon, whatever? If you didn't, That's why. The marketing and promotion of those events were terrible. Whether the events were running on NBC or USA Network or CNBC or Olympic Channel, wherever. Terrible. People didn't know it was on, and as a result, the viewership was lousy. Also, we are seeing more and more with the Olympics themselves that you're not seeing spots. USA Network is not, as far as I know, running spots for their coverage of the Olympics. Did you know that they were on opposite NBC last night? Actually went further. It went from like 7 o'clock until past midnight with events, some of them live, including skiing. I haven't seen a single promotion of CNBC. And last year with the Tokyo Olympic Games, CNBC had those shepherd's foot spots that were too generic. You never knew like what was on that night. And that's a problem. You don't know what's on any given day, any given night, because the spots aren't running or they're not being made. In a way, NBC, and I hate to use the word, and I am, and I'll take responsibility for it, self-sabotaging their coverage. If you don't know what's going on, you have no impetus to watch. So those are the four factors that are behind the drop in ratings, which, by the way, has not been on a one-year basis, but it's really taken place over the last 15, 20 years. The International Olympic Committee's actions, the actions of sports media, the apathy, the way TV has now evolved, and NBC's marketing and promotion. And by the way, with these Beijing Olympic Games, I understand, and I do feel for NBC, because I know they're walking a fine line, because they don't want to get the ire of China or the ire of the IOC. And that's why, for example, as I mentioned, I think on a previous program, they had that media event that was talked about 3 hours before it went on. It was a videotape presentation as opposed to a live event at 30 Rock, which, by the way, they could have done under coronavirus circumstances where everybody could show a vaccine. As a result, the press was not invited to do Q&A live. I haven't seen a single interview since that situation, and there's been no conference calls whatsoever. Again, I understand the pressure that's going on here. And that pressure also extends to the fact that a lot of the NBC coverage is not originating from Beijing. It's originating from Stamford, Connecticut, where they have NBC Sports headquarters. All the commentary and play-by-play people are there. Mike Tirico, if you haven't heard, he is leaving Beijing, where he was earlier on. He is going to Stamford, Connecticut for the next couple days. Then he's going to do all plans for the Super Bowl, and then he's going back to Stamford for the rest. He's not going back to Beijing. So something's up. There's a lot of pressure. And again, I understand where NBC Universal is dealing with. So why do I think there's an opportunity with all that environment for a comeback in viewership? Well, two things. One, because the Olympics are a marvelous event. I grew up on watching Olympics on ABC in Mexico in 1968, in Munich in 1972, and elsewhere in 1976 and beyond. And I love learning about athletes like Kip Kano in track and field, and Olga Korb and Nani Komich in gymnastics, and Franz Klammer and George Kokili in skiing, and Jane Torval and Christopher Dean, who broke the mold with ice dancing with that fantastic performance of Bolero. The Olympics deserve a place on television, and they deserve to be seen and return to their glory through the medium. And I also think that now in this environment, with interactive television, with next-gen television, that there's an opportunity to bring some of that glory back. Maybe not all the way to what it used to be in terms of millions, multi-millions of viewers in the 20, 30, 40, 50 million range every night. But I think there's an opportunity in this new era of television, this era of plentiful TV, smart TV, interactive TV, to bring the Olympics back to a new viewership glory. And here's what has to be done. So here's the game plan. First, with the International Olympic Committee, go back to the every 4 years scenario. No more 2 years. Olympics, winter, summer, calendar year, every 4 years, and stay with it. That's one. Number two, IOC, opening ceremonies open the Olympics, not events. Opening ceremonies. That's why they're there. You want people to watch the opening ceremonies? Have them be opening the games. Not be a second-class or a third-class citizen or an afterthought. That's number one. Sports media, start covering the Olympics again. Give some coverage to the sports, at least to the major Olympic sports. Summer, track and field, swimming, gymnastics. In the winter, skiing, figure skating, and so forth. Give it some due. Find somehow some way to do it. Now, for NBC, number one, Peacock now is in position to be the place to watch the Olympics, live, taped, interactive, any way you want. And that means that all Peacock subscribers, starting with the next Olympics in 2024, should have access to the entire Olympic package, not just premium subscribers as the case here. All Peacock subscribers, whether you watch it with ads or watch it without ads, have it be the main venue. Second, there's a little thing called Olympic Channel that started 4 or 5 years ago under NBC Universal with the U.S. Olympic Committee that, frankly, has been a bust. Why? Not because of the programming, not because of the ownership, not because of management, but because the cable operators don't give a hoot about it. They put it on the highest elevation of digital tiers. They don't give it any promotion, marketing whatsoever. It's time for Peacock to do what it did with the WWE Network. Know how WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, those events, they did better because Peacock ran it on the WWE Network? Put the Olympic Channel 24-7 on Peacock and put first dibs on the U.S. Olympic trials and other major international sports championships dealing with Olympic sports. Put them on Peacock live and promote them and market them. Make Peacock the place anytime to see Olympic sports, to see Olympic highlights, to see and dig up upcoming stats on what's going on. Make that the place. If you switch the Olympic Channel to Peacock and promote the heck out of it, I think it can be a great, great service like the WWE Network is. Then, NBC, USA, CNBC, if you use them, promote them. Promote the games there. Marketing, promotion department, NBC, and PR, stop playing dead. Start promoting it. If you want people to watch NBC, if you want people to watch USA, also Spanish language Telemundo and Universo, you have to tell people what's on. You can't just do generic promos or no promos at all. You got to get going. And cut the ads. It's time to stop the so many ad breaks an hour and so many commercials in each break. It's a turnoff. It is a turnoff to the viewer. And finally, let's really turn Peacock into an interactive, lean-forward Olympic experience. You can do it because of artificial intelligence, which is now available in more and more households. You can do it with next-gen television. Do interactive overlays where people can call up sports scores, can call up medal counts, can call up profiles of athletes, profiles of sports. If they have an issue with the rules of a particular sport or how a sport works, put it on the service. Have people interact with it. Do interactive advertising where maybe you can sell merchandise while the events are going on. And how about the idea of doing video chats with athletes or with the play-by-play people, the commentators, not just for Olympics, but for other Olympic events featuring Olympic sports. Do be interactive. Do video chat. Also, give people the opportunity to lean forward and direct the coverage. Give them a choice of camera angles on the event, live or tape. Give them the opportunity to pull up stats while the event's going on. Make the interactive experience on Peacock as broad, as wide, as lean forward as possible so you get people involved. It was very interesting that last year, Peacock, during that morning show, decided to do those special Connect the Athletes with their parents or their family members or their friends back home through sort of a video chat. We'll do that with We the Public. Let's make it happen. I think it'd be really, really great. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, by the way, is here, is in the chat room. Rick, if you want to give a call, give us your thoughts, go right ahead, 646-652-2906. We'll put them in the chat room. I'd love to hear your thoughts from Philadelphia, so go right ahead in the time we have left. I really believe that the Olympic viewership can rebound. And I think the Olympics deserve it. The athletes from all over the world deserve it. For all the flaws, for all the faults, this is still a wonderful event, and it really needs to be prospered. And I really believe that if these ideas, maybe some from you, were to be adopted, I think we can get the Olympics back and make Olympic television great again. All right, let's hear from Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia. Rick, welcome in.
Hey, Simon. I don't have too much to add to what you said, except that while you were talking, I went on my virtual reality goggles, and NBC has a something called NBC Olympics Virtual Reality by Xfinity. And anyway, it's pretty interesting. But here's the bad part, is that the like warm-ups and things that they film in virtual reality, like they actually put some cameras on like speed skaters or on some of the alpine skiers. They put a 360 camera on one of those guys skiing down there. That's amazing. You're getting a point of view. And like you said, of choosing your angle, because it's 360, I mean, you can look off at the mountains. You can look behind you if you want. Same with the speed skaters. You can look behind you to see what skaters are behind you. Look in front, could just see the ice, which is pretty intimidating in 3D virtual reality. So all that's pretty cool, but that's like the warm-ups and stuff. When the actual Olympics are going on, of course you can't really put cameras on athletes and performers, so there isn't really any of that live. Now they do have virtual reality live, so like hockey is behind the net, and that's kind of interesting. But otherwise, like some of the technology is not totally there yet. But as cameras get smaller, maybe in the coming years, I think that will be something, and something for yourself to check out if you do. Like especially, I took notes that one's called the Alpine Crescendo, and another's called Short Track Big Thrills. But again, it's like the warm-ups, and it's amazing. But once the actual live events come on, they switch to cameras that are back further, and it's not quite as immersive or engaging. But that's something to watch in the future. But otherwise, many of your points I absolutely agree with, especially that I haven't heard that much about it, and some of what I've heard about it actually has been negative. For instance, I happen to be watching basketball basketball on TNT, where Charles Barkley, I guess kind of manufacturing some controversy, went and got a broom and started sweeping up the floor on camera. And he said, this isn't a sport. And he was like talking about curling on there. He was like, what is that? The Olympics. He was like, that's terrible. He was like, that's not athletes. And so almost in a way, like basketball, like our national sports are competing against the Olympics and kind of pushing it away. And it seems like you like totally agree with your point that even on the news, they're not really covering the Olympics much. They always stay with your local sports, not with much of the Olympic coverage.
And Rick, that was the point I was making about not playing dead. You know, TNT is not playing dead. They're running basketball. ESPN ran on Friday night the NHL Skills Challenge. Then ABC the next day with ESPN runs the NHL All-Star Game. There were pro and college basketball games up against the Olympics the last couple of nights on ESPN and other places. That's what we're talking about. Nobody is playing dead anymore. They're not doing reruns. They're not doing movies. It's all over the place, cable, the Netflix, and so forth. And Rick, you make a very good point about the idea of augmented reality. I think augmented reality would be marvelous for the Olympics as an option, again, for a place like Peacock. And you could also do, about directing camera angles, you could have the body cam on the athlete so you see what the athlete sees. That would be a fantastic deal. And I think NBC should definitely investigate that for Peacock. You know, again, make the experience lean forward. Get the viewer involved in all sorts of ways. And I think Peacock could be the great avenue for that, including augmented reality. And we know it can be done on television, because Portal TV does it all the time. Other people have done it. Local stations do it now for weathercasts. Weather Channel does it all the time. They were one of the pioneers of augmented reality on TV. So it can be done.
Absolutely, absolutely. I guess some of it is tough to do because you never want like a camera being dislodged and ruining an actual competition, an actual competitor's chance at a medal. So we'll kind of see in the future. I've seen in hockey, actually, it looked like one of the referees was wearing some virtual reality camera in their helmet. But they didn't do it live. They did it during replays. A replay or two suddenly, like it was virtual reality, and I was like, how are they doing this? And then I realized, oh, it's the referee's helmet has the camera in it, not any of the players. So,
yeah, you can do it like the pylon. You know, we now have pylon cams on both college and pro football telecasts. You could take the pylon cam technology and use it with the athletes.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that'll definitely be interesting to see. And, you know, I'm checking it out. It's all kind of cutting edge, so it's not perfect. but the future, you know, the future for it looks amazing. So I hope they get with it, like you're saying, and I hope that they're listening to you, Simon.
I hope so, too. Rick, thanks for your thoughts. I really appreciate it. Take care.
You too, Simon. Thanks.
Rick Webb from Philadelphia offering his Olympic thoughts here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And I want to hear from you. What do you think needs to be done on NBC, at NBC, at the International Olympic Committee, with sports media and other parties to get viewers back into an Olympic viewing mode? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, at simonapple04@yahoo.com, or communicate with me on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. I'm all ears and all eyes as well. So let's hear from you. Again, thank you to Mark DiMassimo from DIGO for being with us. Remember, coming your way Friday, we've got a big opening half hour from Bel Air, executive producer and co-showrunners TJ Brady and Rasheed Newsom, and from Poetry in America on PBS, the creator and host Lisa New, and from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, reading a poem live on our air, popular actress Donna Lynn Champlin. She, by the way, won a Gracie Award from American Women Radio and Television for that role. Kate, you came in late. Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and check out our podcast sites. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not through those of Blog Talk Radio and other services program. Andy Toews, BTR General Manager, Jay Sonberg is Head of Content. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world for a one-month trial and the opportunity to get your first 3 months free. Go to audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. Back with you on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuna Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Whatever you're doing between now and Friday, please make it safe and great. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, check your medical situation, find out about all the alternatives, including antiviral pills, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.